cannabis topics in less than 10 minutes. Let's go.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of The Dime. I'm Brian Fields, and with me, as always, is Kellen Finney. And this week, we've got a very special guest, Jesse Campo Amor. Jesse, thanks for taking the time. How are you doing today?
Lovely day. Thank you so much for bringing me on. Big fan of what you guys do, man. Thank you so much for having me.
As of today, 1/18/2023, what is the current status of New York cannabis market?
So March 31st of last year, we signed the MRTA into law. Quickly after that, we get the Cannabis Control Board set up, which is the 5-person commission that oversees the Office of Cannabis Management, similar to our state liquor authority with their commissioners. Quickly, look, there was a very intentional political calculus here, which is on the initial rollout, how do we, from a social equity lens, make sure we're empowering some of those folks that have really fallen between the cracks, right? So what happened first was we licensed conditional cultivators and conditional processors. Those were hemp farmers, small hemp farmers that have been growing hemp at least for the last 2 years. And then we quickly turned around and announced the conditional adult use retail dispensaries, or collectively we call them card applicants. Those are folks on the retail side that were justice involved, meaning they were convicted for a cannabis-related offense in the state of New York and had demonstrated that they were able to run a profitable business for 2 years. And so we've now issued about 36, 38 of those licenses. The 25th of this month, OCM will reconvene and will announce another 20 to 30. And, you know, they've said 150 of these licenses are up for grabs. We'll see. There is some hubbub now. You're hearing it first now on your podcast, but there might be a scenario where we end up issuing a lot more than 150 for these card applicants.
Well, there's definitely some areas there that specifically I want to push back, but I want to stay with the scoring first because I recognize that type of feat, right? Like having only, what'd you say, 35 licenses to give out and having to score all these individuals, it seems very subjective as the scoring process, understanding which variables matter most. Because when you get down to, let's say, the 30 to 40 range, it's nearly impossible to probably distinguish between who deserves one, who not. So why not open up the licenses and let more of a free market opportunity and allow the strong to survive and those who have the chops in order to figure out? I recognize there's capital hurdles as well and extremely competitive. But why not open it up and just be more of a free market?
This is a really important issue because I think there's a school of thought that says a limited license program protects the value of the paper, protects the value of the license. Absence of a limited license program, the value of that license, the value of that paper can't be protected. And in the event that some of these businesses go into default, we can reposition that license and recoup any money that we've invested. There's a thought here that in order to do that, we have to create a limited license program because, quite frankly, we looked at Oregon, we looked at other states that weren't limited, and it's a nightmare over there, right? Like you know, I've been to warehouses over there with cannabis. I'm 6'5". I've seen mountains of cannabis that dwarf me, right? Because they let everybody grow out there. They didn't limit supply at all. And so there has to be some healthy balance in between it, right? Like I think to your point, I think there's room, quite frankly, to open it up past 150, especially with now they're saying, you know, the regulations have been proposed for the adult use market, say that the ROs now, the MSOs and the verticals in the medical market have to wait 3 years to enter the adult use market. So these guys have some runway, you know, in a state where we have 20 million give or so residents, you know, the idea that we have one store for every 20,000 residents isn't a crazy idea. So you're looking at 1,000 potential stores when it's all said and done. Why not issue 250 to start? Quite frankly, there's a lot of product that we need to get away, that we need to get off. And we need more shelves to do that. So I'm in a school of thought that we have the bandwidth and we have the space to issue more licenses. It comes down to real estate and capital.
In your opinion, Jesse, what is the most important goal or aspect when opening up an adult use market? Is it the on-ramp for the traditional market into legal, or is it something else?
Look, in New York State, the two driving narratives were health and social justice, right? It was repairing the harm that was created by the war on drugs and providing communities access to quality, affordable cannabis and medical. You know, I think there are communities and look, I really believe in the medicine of this plant, right? And I think communities really too far off and overlooked. Everybody knows that everybody has somebody in their neighborhood that's sitting on the couch smoking 7 blunts in a day or somebody. Like, we all know that guy. What I tell you is that guy is self-medicating, right? Now, he's over-medicating and he's misusing, but then he's medicating. He's dealing with something. And the closer and the more we realize how to educate our folks and how to properly medicate, the better service we're doing for our people, because opioids, pills, prescription, all these things that are devastating our communities can be solved with cannabis. And so to me, it's like that becomes the focus point here, is quality, affordable medicine and making sure that the harm that has been done is we're slowly repairing that harm. And so that becomes the two focal points. And those are the driving narratives that help get us over the finish line.
What is happening today at City Council that is probably very important for the future of the cannabis market?
Yes. So the City Council is holding a hearing as we speak about the proliferation of these illegal stores. If you go down New York, I say it all the time, I can get a dab at my bodega right now, right? Like, there are stores and it's ostentatious, guys. The signs read Zaza or Pip, right? It's like, it is blatant. I can't walk 2 city blocks in Manhattan without passing a store. And I think a lot of New Yorkers really have no idea what is compliant and what isn't compliant. And I think the state is starting to embark on an education campaign of buy legal New York weed. They're putting medallions on the front of the stores, a QR code that you can scan. But look, this is really going to come down to consumers making educated decisions, right? There was a report that came out a couple of weeks ago from the Medical Cannabis Industry Association, which is really just all the MSOs, all the ROs. They bought a bunch of product from the illegal stores and tested it. Pesticides, E. coli, heavy metals, just things that you probably wouldn't want to consume or put in your body, they found. And so consumers are going to have to make a decision, right? Do they want to run the risk and run the gamble of using product that has not been tested? Or do they want to jump in and support guys playing by the rules? Look, the other thing is, and let's be honest, like, a lot of New Yorkers that have consumed have been smoking weed with pesticides and heavy metals for the last 20 years. So you tell them that and they're like, "What? That's what I've been smoking. So what's the problem? What's the difference?" But I think as, you know, we're moving into this very health conscious world where people want the antioxidants and the Zambucas and all that other stuff, that's going to be part of the issue.
When you got started in your cannabis journey, what did you get right? And most importantly, what did you get wrong?
Well, what we got wrong was, look, I think sometimes in government, you try to pick winners and losers before the game's even begun, right? And I think the problem with that from a bureaucratic standpoint is we don't have a crystal ball. And so you really don't know how things are going to unfold. Part I think we did well was understanding that the market on day one is going to look very different than the market in year 5, and not having the expectations of, oh, everything has to be figured out on day one. Things are going to have to play themselves out. Competition is good. Competition forces creativity. This is a market that rewards creativity. It rewards people that think on their feet and know how to work around different problems.
Before we do predictions, we ask all of our guests, if you could sum up your experience in a main takeaway or lesson learned to pass on to the next generation, what would it be?
If you don't share it, you can't keep it. I think too often people are gatekeepers, or they want to hold on for desperate because it's their thing and they care about it. But the reality is, unless you share it, unless you educate others, unless you bring other people on board, you're not going to protect it or preserve it. It will die with you. It will go on with you if you don't share it. And so if you really want to keep it, you have to share it. And I think that's a good piece of advice for folks.
Really well said. All right, prediction time. Jesse, it's 2028. What does the New York adult use cannabis market look like?
In 2028, groups like Happy Monkey have 20 stores in Manhattan, another 20 in the Bronx, and wherever else they want to have it. Social consumption is, you know, social consumption sites are places of creativity. And we have over 5 million sales of quality product in the streets. You know, this becomes the epicenter of cannabis. And so I think, you know, New York becomes the top market, the number one market in the world, passing California and everywhere else. That's what I predict.
So for our listeners, they want to get in touch, they want to learn more, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Jesse Campomore, J-E-S-S-E, Campomore. Or look at my website, CampoAmoreAndSons.com. Any way to reach me there, I'm on Instagram by my name. And they want to follow up with you. I mean, we can find a way to plug us in. But I'm happy to talk to anybody. Any friend of yours is a friend of mine. I love what you guys are doing. I think you guys are having the right conversations, the real conversations. Really appreciate, you know, guys giving me the time to talk to you guys. I'm here anytime.
I appreciate that. We'll link it up in the show notes. This was fun. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, appreciate your time.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you, brother.
Guys, if you've enjoyed this podcast over the last few years, can you please take 3 minutes or less and leave us a quick review on Apple or Spotify? All reviews make a massive difference for us and help other people like you find this podcast. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, I'm Gary, and I invite you to discover the Cannabis Podcast, a biweekly podcast focused on a Canadian's cannabis culture. I would be the Canadian, and my cannabis passion and culture has been building for 5 decades. I share that passion for this wonderful plant in every episode, through conversations with cannabis advocates and enthusiasts, stories about the ever-changing legal environment, and some hands-on testing of product in a segment I call Cultivar Corner. The Cannabis Podcast, a Canadian's cannabis culture, one toke at a time.